Welcome to the OrthoClips podcast series, where we're going to discuss the latest hot topics and high-impact papers in orthopedic surgery. I'm your host, Saqib Rahman. Let's get this episode started. All right, this is going to be an update on the acute management of spinal cord injury. And going to be reviewing two papers. One is an update on spinal cord injury and current management by Carroll and co-authors from Georgetown. And this is in the October JBJS reviews. And the other one is entitled Updates in the Early Management of Acute Spinal Cord Injury. And this is by Lambrechts and co-authors from the Rothman Institute. This one's from September 1st, 2023. But both similar articles, both fairly recent, reviewing the management of spinal cord injury. So main themes we're going to talk about is number one, I love this, time is spine, right? So the urgency of surgical decompression, early surgical intervention is paramount in acute spinal cord injury management, certainly within 24 hours, but possibly even earlier. So to quote the Lambrechts paper, the goal of early reduction and or surgical intervention is to quickly reduce intraspinal pressure, thus restoring perfusion to the spinal cord. So if you think about it, the initial damage, that primary injury to the spinal cord is probably irreversible. However, the resulting cascade of the secondary injury is potentially reversible, and it's often worsened by ongoing mechanical compression and instability. So the STASIS trial, or Surgical Timing in Acute Spinal Cord Injury study, served as a landmark trial demonstrating the efficacy of early reduction or decompression after spinal cord injury. And they actually showed that the early intervention was associated with an odds ratio of 2.83, or almost three times higher odds of a two-grade AIS improvement by 6 months. So an AIS is the ASIA impairment scale, right? A, B, C, D, and E. So the STASIS trial kind of really helped to demonstrate that to us. This optimal time window may be within 4 to 9 hours, with benefits significantly decreasing and dropping off after 24 to 36 hours. Second thing is the controversial role of methylprednisolone. It's historically been a mainstay, but it's gotten a little controversial. It has anti-inflammatory properties, including inhibition of pro-inflammatory transcription factors, and can decrease the inflammatory response and maybe attenuate that secondary phase of injury. And we have this legacy of the NASIS trials, right? So NASIS 2 in particular showed some benefit, but that effect size was small, and subsequent studies have questioned its efficacy. And we worry about, the complications. Patients have had a potentially markedly greater complication profile, to the point that a lot of the guidelines, like from the AANS and AO Spine, have said that there is really just a weak recommendation to offer 24-hour infusion of methylprednisolone only if patients present within 8 hours. So it's gotten a bit controversial with steroids, but there's some promising new therapies, some emerging neuroprotective and regenerative therapies like riluzole, which is a glutamate antagonist, showing some promise in preclinical trials. Minocycline, that tetracycline antibiotic, has got some neuroprotective properties and also being looked at in phase 3 clinical trials. Even NSAIDs may offer neuroprotective and neurodegenerative benefit through cyclooxygenase inhibition. And then stem cells, things like bone marrow mesenchymal stem cells are showing some promise, but there are limitations. And human embryonic stem cells so if you have like oligodendrocyte precursor cells, they may show potential for remyelination and neurologic improvement. Then the last thing is the idea of maintaining spinal cord perfusion through MAP goals. You want your MAP between 85 and 90 for 7 days post-injury. And even things like optimizing through CSF drainage and even expansive duroplasty in order to reduce intraspinal pressure and improve spinal cord perfusion, especially in cases with significant cord swelling. The DISCUS trial is a study that's currently investigating the efficacy of expansive duroplasty. So That's my take on it. What did you guys think about the papers? Want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, so let's start with the two injury phases.
Okay.
I think it's always helpful to remind ourselves of the difference between that primary mechanical injury.
Yes.
And then the secondary cascade of inflammation and cell death.
Absolutely. So that primary injury, that's unfortunately irreversible.
Right.
But it's that secondary injury that gives us that window
right.
to intervene.
Right.
And hopefully minimize, you know, the long-term damage.
Yeah. And that brings us to time is spine.
Yeah.
And the review article really hammered this home with that case.
Oh, yeah.
Of the rugby players.
Mm-hmm.
With the cervical facet dislocations.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Remember that?
Yeah.
The ones who had reduction within 4 hours.
Right.
Had a much higher chance of full neurologic recovery.
Yeah, that was pretty dramatic illustration of that principle.
Yeah.
But we also have to remember, you know, the Stasis trial.
Yeah.
While a landmark trial did have its limitations.
Yeah.
And while things are moving towards that, you know, ultra early decompression,
yeah.
12 hours or even less.
Right.
It's not always feasible. You know, we got transfer times or availability.
Right.
Need for a coordinated trauma response.
Right.
It's not always that easy.
It seems like we're seeing more and more evidence that cervical injuries.
Yes.
Do better.
They do.
With that early decompression compared to thoracic.
They do tend to have a better prognosis overall.
Okay.
So yeah, time is, spine is true, but you know.
Yeah.
Got to be mindful of those logistical challenges.
Right.
And the individual patient factors.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to a topic that I know generates a lot of debate.
Oh boy.
Methylprednisolone.
Here we go.
You know, this treatment's had a long and contentious history in spinal cord injury management.
It really has. You know, those NASCES trials
yeah.
provided that initial evidence.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Mixed results.
Mixed results, to say the least.
Right. And the current guidelines reflect that uncertainty.
Yeah.
Only a weak recommendation for use within 8 hours.
Right.
But there are valid arguments on both sides.
Oh, absolutely.
Of the debate, right?
Yeah. So some studies have shown a small benefit
yeah.
neurologically with the high dose methylprednisolone, particularly in those incomplete injuries.
Right.
But we can't forget about the risks, you know,
yeah, yeah.
infections, GI bleeds, delayed wound healing.
Yeah.
You know, these are serious complications, especially in this population who are already vulnerable
Absolutely.
To multi-system dysfunction.
And this is where clinical judgment comes into play, right?
Absolutely.
Weighing the benefits
yeah.
versus the risks for each individual patient.
Yep.
There's no easy answer.
Nope.
Which is why the debate continues.
It really does. And I think it underscores the need for personalized medicine.
Yeah.
In this field, you know?
For sure.
Really taking all that into account.
Okay.
Before we jump to any conclusions.
All right. Well, let's move away from the controversy.
Okay.
To something a bit more hopeful.
Right.
Emerging therapies.
Yeah.
It feels like we're on the cusp of some real breakthroughs.
It does.
In neuroprotection and regeneration.
There's definitely a lot of exciting research going on.
Yeah. Like Riluzole, for example.
Yeah.
Has shown some promise.
Riluzole. Yeah, has shown some promise in reducing neuronal loss.
Right.
Minocycline
yeah.
with its anti-inflammatory and neuroprotective properties
right.
is another interesting avenue.
And then there's the potential of NSAIDs.
Oh, yeah.
Not just for neuroprotection.
Right.
But for possibly promoting regeneration.
Yeah. Through that ROA inhibition.
Right.
That's a promising area.
And of course, we can't forget stem cell therapy.
Yeah.
While it's still early.
Yeah. Early stages.
Bone marrow.
Yeah.
Mesenchymal stem cells
yeah.
have shown some encouraging results.
Yeah.
But what really caught my eye was the research on the MSC-derived exosomes.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine harnessing that therapeutic power
right.
of those cellular messengers without the risks
right.
of direct cell transplantation.
Absolutely. It's a fascinating approach.
Yeah, it speaks to the creativity and
yeah.
dedication of these researchers.
It really does.
Okay, let's shift gears one more time.
All right.
To our final topic,
mm-hmm.
optimizing spinal cord perfusion, maintaining that adequate blood pressure to make sure that blood flow is getting to that injured cord.
Yep.
Seems pretty straightforward.
In theory, yes.
Right.
But as both papers pointed out,
yeah.
even that standard practice of targeting a MAP of 85 to 90
yeah.
has sparked debate.
Is it truly therapeutic or just prognostic?
Exactly.
And can we even achieve these targets safely,
right,
consistently,
especially
in patients who are hemodynamically unstable.
Exactly. Those are the key questions.
And there's some emerging evidence
yeah.
that CSF drainage and expansive duroplasty, in addition to surgical decompression,
yeah.
may play a significant role in optimizing that spinal cord perfusion.
For sure. And the DISCUS trial.
Right.
which is looking at expansive duroplasty, should provide us some pretty valuable insight into that whole question.
So while we await those results,
yeah,
I think it's important to remember that spinal cord injury management is
right.
and will likely remain
absolutely
a complex and evolving field.
Oh, yeah.
This has been a really insightful deep dive.
It has.
We've covered the importance of early intervention.
Yeah.
We grappled with that methylprednisolone dilemma.
Uh-huh.
Explore the potential of these really cutting-edge therapies.
Very cool stuff.
And we delved into the nuances of spinal cord perfusion.
We did.
It's clear that we need to stay informed.
Yeah.
Adapt our practice as new research emerges.
Absolutely.
It's not just about, you know, keeping up with the latest surgical techniques.
Right.
Or the new medications coming out.
It's really about taking, you know,
right.
a comprehensive yeah. approach.
Right. A holistic approach.
To each patient.
To each patient, right.
You know, considering yeah. their injury characteristics, probably. Their overall health.
Their goals, their expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. And that requires,
yes.
you know, communication, collaboration across the whole care team.
For sure.
From the paramedics who see them at the scene.
Right.
All the way through to rehab.
To the rehab specialist.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that, you know,
yeah.
we're not treating spines.
Right.
We're caring for people
yeah.
who are facing a really life-altering event.
Absolutely.
And our job is to provide them with the best possible care.
Yep.
Using the best evidence
Absolutely.
Tailored to each individual.
Could not have said it better myself.
Well.
I think hopefully our colleagues out there found this discussion
yeah.
helpful in navigating, you know,
the complexity.
These complex injuries that, you uh-huh. know, we're constantly evolving. This mm-hmm. field is constantly evolving.
Is it?
And, you know, it's up to us to stay.
At the forefront.
At the forefront.
To deliver the best possible outcomes.
For our patients, that's what it's all about.
Well, thanks for joining us on this journey.
My pleasure.
And until next time, keep those scalpels sharp.
But keep those minds even sharper. Thanks, guys, and hope you guys all enjoyed this podcast.